It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Texas Tango, good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Things got heated in Houston last night at the third Democratic presidential debate. The top 10 candidates on stage, and the gloves came off.
Are you forgetting already what you said just 2 minutes ago?
Julian Castro questioned the sanity of Joe Biden while Joe Biden cornered Bernie Sanders on his Medicare for All plan.
For a socialist, you got a lot more confidence in corporate America than I do.
Gun control, a hot topic as well, with Beto O'Rourke promising to confiscate what he called weapons of war.
We're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47.
And then there was the trade war with China. That came up too. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
I remember President Trump scoffed and said he'd like to see me making a deal with Xi Jinping. I'd like to see him making a deal with Xi Jinping.
Tech tycoon Andrew Yang got some cheers from the crowd when he promised free money.
My campaign will now give a freedom dividend of $1,000 a month for an entire year to 10 American families. Someone watching this at home right now.
So which candidate came out on top?
Joe Biden. He went into this the front runner. He remains the front runner. He was the clear winner.
And who did not?
Kamala Harris. She seems very insecure in her policy position, so I think she was the loser.
Political pundits Leslie Marshall and Kate Pavlich weighing in. The next Democratic presidential debate is next month in the state of Ohio. President Trump weighed in on the debate. He called the candidates weak, and he warned of their big government socialist agenda. He also took a dig at Elizabeth Warren.
I hit Pocahontas way too early. I thought she was gone. She's emerged from the ashes.
The president speaking in Baltimore, and he took it to Bernie Sanders, too.
Crazy Bernie. He is a crazy guy.
He said China's president would be glad to face off in trade talks with Joe Biden.
Can you imagine those two guys in a room? Here's Xi, huh? And here's Sleepy Joe. What? Where am I?
The president told a gathering of congressional Republicans that he will be offering a substantial middle-class tax cut next year. Stocks are higher today after China agreed not to slap U.S. farm goods with higher tariffs. We're talking pork and soybeans here. Also, retail sales for the month of August, stronger than expected. Consumer spending accounts for about 70% of total U.S. economic output. The Bahamas just cannot get a break. A tropical storm warning in effect now in the same area that was decimated by Hurricane Dorian 2 weeks ago.
It's a loosely formed system that is slowly going to be getting its act together over the Bahamas over the next day or so.
Meteorologist David Parkinson, 1,300 people still missing as a result of Dorian, which hit the islands as a Cat 5 hurricane. The U.S. government's dispatched $10 million in emergency assistance. Now to that Labor Day dive boat disaster off the coast of California. The Coast Guard says all six crew members were asleep when the flames broke out. 34 were killed.
The boat was required by the Coast Guard to have one crew member serve as a roaming night watchman. It's unclear what started the fire, but among the possible causes the NTSB is considering is whether lithium-ion batteries used to power phones and cameras overheated.
That's correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti. The public face of the college admission scandal faces the legal music today. Actress Felicity Huffman will be sentenced in a Boston courtroom. Reporter Miguel Almagar.
For many people, they think this is a litmus test. Will the judge be lenient or not for Felicity Huffman? Of course, each case is weighed independently, but it's up to the judge in every single case to give the sentencing. It'll be her decision every time.
Felicity Huffman is the first of 50 defendants to be sentenced in the biggest college admission scandal ever. Prosecutors seeking a month behind bars and a $25,000 fine. Huffman has admitted to paying a test proctor $15,000 to fudge her daughter's SAT exam. Singer-songwriter Edward Joseph Mahoney has died. You know him better as Eddie Money.
Take me home tonight.
Cancer of the esophagus has claimed the life of the 80s rock icon. Hits like Take Me Home Tonight, Baby Hold On to Me, and Two Tickets to Paradise, instant classics. Money was born in Brooklyn, and he was a cop for a few years before moving to L.A. to pursue his music career. Eddie Money, dead at 70 years old. Yesterday, we told you about the growing number of young adults who are leaving the church, but what about those who do not abandon their faith? Correspondent Michael Harrington.
A lot has been made of the increasing number of Christian millennials who quit church as they reach adulthood. But what about the ones who stay? A new report from the Barna Group paints a picture of what it calls resilient millennials. About 90% say their relationship with Christ brings them joy and deep satisfaction. 88% feel like they belong at their church. And 86% say the Bible teaching they get there is relevant to their lives.
Michael Harrington in Washington. Hearing loss affects one in five U.S. adults, and would you believe it's linked to loneliness? Dutch researchers say for people under 70, every decibel drop in hearing boosts the odds of severe loneliness by 7%. Scientists at Johns Hopkins think there are links between hearing loss, loneliness, and even dementia. Survey says spending time with friends can lower your risk of dementia.
Researchers in London say regular social interactions early in life can diminish the odds of you suffering from dementia at an older age. Scientists looked at data collected from more than 10,000 people over a 30-year period. What they found was those that remain connected to a close network of friends have a 12% lower risk of suffering from memory loss than those who live in isolation. The final analysis, say the experts, being social can counter the cognitive effects of growing old. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Another study today shows a third of all families sit in silence while eating their dinner. A third. Nearly half of respondents say their faces are stuck in that cell phone during dinner time. 4 out of 10 parents say they usually eat that meal at a different time from the kids. This study was done by the Tex-Mex food producer Old El Paso. Two giant asteroids will be flying near planet Earth this weekend. One's about 800 feet in diameter. That'll be whizzing by late tonight. The other's 2,000 feet in diameter, and that'll cruise near our planet on Saturday morning. Both will come within 3.5 million miles of Earth. NASA considers any asteroid that comes within 30 million miles of us to be a near-Earth object. Still to come on the Noon Report, daycare safety in Pennsylvania, the way forward for New York Catholics, and more evidence that vaping is bad for you. But first, let's take it outside, get a sneak peek at the forecast.
This is meteorologist Ken McKinley. For most locations, quite a bit of cloudiness this afternoon, a bit of a breeze, temperatures into the 70s, not uncomfortable. There might be a few showers around later tonight and tomorrow as a couple of weak fronts come through, but they won't amount to all that much. Full forecast details for the weekend are coming your way at about 10 minutes.
All right, Ken, thank you very much. Checking the stories, making news where you live. Across New York and Pennsylvania, a bankruptcy declaration by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Rochester, New York, has sent shockwaves through the 12-county region that it represents. Priest abuse survivor Brian Della Frenier.
Enough people have come forward to cause the diocese to know that it's their reckoning. Their time has come. And now it's time to face the music.
Patricia Rosati, a lifelong Catholic, says she's heartbroken the church has had to go this route.
The Catholic Church has been through many, many bad things in the past, and I have faith that that God will get us through the rest of us.
Rosati says she prays every day for the victims of clergy abuse. Attorney Vince Moreni does not expect a major shakeup, though, in the day-to-day operations of the church.
This will not affect the Catholic Church and dissolve it. I mean, on Sunday, you'll still be going to church.
Chapter 11 bankruptcy brings to a halt most of the lawsuits filed under the New York Child Victims Act. Attorney Steve Boyd thinks the church is trying to keep the truth from getting out.
And now they're attempting to cut these survivors at the knees before their story can truthfully be told.
86 parishes in the Rochester Diocese will remain open while the church restructures its debt. 3,000 students will continue to attend Catholic school within the diocese. 17 people across Pennsylvania believed to have a lung disease associated with vaping. Family Life's Tracy Lynn reports on the latest investigation.
Yeah, the State Health Department is looking into another 20 cases that may also be tied to electronic cigarettes. Pennsylvania is working with the Centers for Disease Control as well as poison control centers in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh to learn the cause of the mysterious lung disease. Some experts have pointed to a chemical often used in liquefied cannabis, vitamin E acetate, as a potential cause. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, appreciate it. Pennsylvania looking to increase safety at child care facilities a month after five children tragically died in a fire at a daycare center in Erie. The state will be performing routine fire safety checks starting next week. Teresa Miller is the Pennsylvania Secretary of Human Services.
While we can never replace the precious lives lost that day, we can decide as a community and a commonwealth to proactively pursue changes that might prevent future tragedies.
There were not enough smoke detectors in that home in Erie where those children died in August. Child care facilities in Pennsylvania will now have to show that they have working smoke detectors on every floor and fire extinguishers as well in the kitchens. New York's conservative congressman Chris Collins is confident he will be exonerated on insider trading charges. The 27th district representative says if he does decide to run for re-election, it'll be no contest. He says,
I will tell you, if I do, I'm very confident I will win. Polling, and we all know what you mean by polling, polling would say right now I would win a primary in a landslide.
Several prominent Republicans in the Buffalo area are considering running for Collins' seat in a primary. The Republican representative says he'll make a decision on his political future by the end of the year. A middle school teacher from a college prep school in Buffalo has been arrested by the FBI. The charge, attempted exploitation of a child, 59-year-old Peter Hingston of Amherst, facing up to 40 years behind bars. He was a technology teacher at City Honors. Cops say he used school equipment to take inappropriate pictures and even make videos of students without their consent. Lord's Hospital in Binghamton showing off its brand new dental van. It'll provide dental services to elementary schools and rural communities in the greater Binghamton area.
This is one way for us to go out and capture the population that doesn't necessarily have access to health care or dental care. So this was a really big part of us actually migrating to some of our surrounding counties.
That's Lord's spokeswoman Cindy Fitch. She says dental problems can contribute to more serious health ailments. It's 12 past the hour. This is the Noon Report, and it's time next for sports. The two-minute drill with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, let's start with Monday Night Football. Buccaneers leading the Panthers 20-14, but the Panthers have the ball just 4th-and-1 from the 2-yard line. Can they score?
Toss, McCaffrey, depends where they put it. What a play by Hargraves out on the edge, and he did not get it.
No, game over. Bucks win 20-14 to move to 1-1. Carolina falls to 0-2. Baseball. Yankees creeping closer to the American League East title, sweeping a doubleheader in Detroit, winning 10-4 and 6-4. Their magic number to clinch is 5, but can they stay healthy? Aaron Boone.
Everyone in that room is capable of doing really special things, and that doesn't change.
Staying hot and flushing, the Mets. Juan Ligueras hit 2 of the 6 home runs the Mets had, drove in 6. Mets hammered the Diamondbacks 11-1. Playoffs? Michael Conforto hopes so.
We've been doing it since day one. We haven't been able to hold on to some games in the first half, but I think we've turned the corner here, and we're looking forward to making a push.
Mets remain 2 out of the National League wild card. Phillies also 2 out of the wild card after beating the Braves 9-5. Manager Gabe Kapler says the bullpen keeping them alive.
They contribute, right? A couple games back, middle of September, and we're having guys like Blake Parker and Jared Hughes come up and step up in huge situations for us, go through really tough lineups, tough hitters, get big outs for us in a pennant race.
In Minneapolis, the Nationals pounded the Twins 12-6. The Twins have dropped 3 of their last 4 to have a 3.5 game lead over Cleveland, but now they head to Cleveland to battle the Indians. CJ Cron can't wait.
We're the one they're chasing. The pressure's not on us right now. The pressure's on those guys to play well. We just need to play confident. We need to have fun again, and I'm sure we score a few runs. All that will kind of take care of itself.
In Toronto, Boston snapping their 5-game skid, beating the Blue Jays 7-4. Pirates double up San Fran 4-2. for Family Life. I'm Sonny Delphia.
All right. Excellent work as always, Sonny. Thank you very much. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the Capital Connection crew primed and ready to go. They're going to talk issues in the news emanating from the state capitals, Albany and Harrisburg. Lots to get to there. Ken McKinley has that weekend forecast for you. And at the end of our broadcast today, a very special delivery happened on 9/11. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. It's coming up on the Noon Report.
You can't have your cake and eat it too, and you can't have economic prosperity or cultural vitality without the worldview that inspired it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Last week, the government of Hong Kong finally withdrew a proposed extradition law that sparked mass protests and that have rocked the territory and has rattled Beijing for weeks. However, if Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, thought that withdrawing the extradition law would end the protest, she was mistaken. Over the weekend, demonstrators continued to rally, to march, and to wave the U.S. flag while chanting, "Resist Beijing, liberate Hong Kong, and, get this one, pray for us, U.S., pray for us." Their chant highlights not only a Christian dimension in their protest, but the potential impact they think Christianity could have on the Communist Party's dictatorial rule, both in Hong Kong and throughout China. While the protests were initially sparked by the extradition law, it's clear that deep dissatisfaction with life under Beijing is keeping the flames burning, especially as the Communist Party attempts to strengthen its grip over Hong Kong. One protester told the Los Angeles Times, "The whole system in Hong Kong is rotten from top to bottom. We want to tear it down and start fresh." Well, in the midst of all this, Communist Party leaders know what many of the commentators and so-called experts in the West have long forgotten, that the ideas about justice and freedom that motivate many of the protesters in Hong Kong are rooted in Christianity. How can we be so sure that communist leaders know this? Because of a 2011 study by the state-run Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. As one Academy member put it, "We were asked to look into what accounted for the success, in fact, the preeminence of the West all over the world. After researchers studied everything from, quote, a historical, political, economic, and cultural perspective, they realized that the heart of the West culture is its religion, Christianity. The Christian moral foundation of social and cultural life was what made possible the emergence of capitalism and the successful transition to democratic politics." Well, that's quite a conclusion, to which an official of the Academy added, "And we don't have any doubt about this." Chuck Colson pointed out 8 years ago that the connection between Christianity and the success of the West has created a conundrum for Beijing. As he put it back then, Communist Party officials know that the industriousness and creativity of the West was born out of the Christian worldview, which sees every individual created in the image of God, desiring freedom, creative in nature, motivated by civic duty, and love of neighbor. At the same time, China's actions in Hong Kong and mainland China reveal that the Communist Party sees all religions, and Christianity in particular, as dangerous rivals. If Jesus is Lord, Xi Jinping is not. As Chuck Colson also said, if Beijing truly opened its doors to Christianity and unleashed the creative and spiritual potential of its people, the result would be even greater prosperity and growing global and economic clout. But that prosperity and clout would come at great cost to the power of the communist dictatorship. The crackdown across mainland China and the attempts to control Hong Kong suggest that the Chinese government wants what it cannot have, to enjoy Western creativity and economic vitality while simultaneously suppressing Christianity, the historical source of Western creativity and vitality. And just as Beijing can't have it both ways, here's a note for all Western leaders. Neither can we. As the people of Hong Kong sing their hymns and chant their slogans, they've made clear they're not willing to trade their freedoms and loyalties, especially their religious freedoms and religious loyalties, for what Xi and company are offering. And before I leave you today, I want to tell you that we have a free webinar Wednesday, September 18th, with none other than Oz Guinness about his new book, Carpe Diem Redeemed. Come to Breakpoint.org to register. That's Breakpoint.org. You won't want to miss it. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 past the hour. It's Friday. A lot of you have outdoor plans this weekend. Ken McKinley has weather where you live. All right, Ken, filling in for Kevin today. Thank you very much. It's Friday the 13th, September 13th, and this is the Noon Report. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are, as always, Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Geer at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Let's begin with you, Jason. It is the law of the land now, early voting in New York. Are the local counties ready for this?
Well, they're going to have to be ready one way or another. You know, voters will have 10 days prior to the election to cast an early ballot. Now, not all polling sites will be open. There'll be a limited number of them. But it is changing the game as to even how political campaigns will respond when they anticipate voters coming out earlier rather than on one single election day.
What happens if you cast a vote early and then decide, hey, maybe I don't want to vote for this guy or gal. I'd rather vote for somebody else. That kind of puts you in a quandary, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Your vote is cast once it's cast. And that's why, honestly, we would have preferred it be just a single voting day. We think there's something unifying about that. All of the information is in. It's a day we can all participate in the same day. But nonetheless, the legislature, in its infinite wisdom, sought for a 10-day early voting period.
I love what you call early voting, Jason. Get to the polls early. But they didn't heed that advice. Okay, we've got the State House and the State Senate in Harrisburg ready to get back to work, Michael. Last week we talked about some of the issues that you're watching. Do we know anything more about what they may try to move this session?
Well, we do. The House of Representatives comes back next week, the Senate to follow, and then they have not a whole lot of session days before the end of the year, probably about 12 or 13 for the Senate, a little bit more than that for the House of Representatives. We are especially watching some pro-life legislation. The House of Representatives did pass the Down Syndrome Protection Act earlier this year. We're encouraging people to call their state senators to get the Senate to take action on this bill, which would prevent the abortions of children with Down syndrome just based on an in vitro diagnosis of that. So that's one of the key issues that we're watching. Also, as I mentioned last week, Governor Wolf continues his sort of opposition to charter schools and giving parents options. There are a number of school choice bills now that are going to be pushed this legislative session. Speaker Mike Torzai is behind one that would provide school choice relief for families in Harrisburg that we strongly back here at the Pennsylvania Family Institute.
Yeah, he is really cracking down on charter schools this year. Jason, this week we remembered 18 years since 9/11. Hard to believe it's been 18 years. I heard Rudy Giuliani say yesterday, in some respects it feels like yesterday, in other respects it feels like 100 years ago. It's just that kind of an event. Governor Cuomo wants to make sure this history does not get lost on the future generations. I read a statistic the other day that the last high schoolers who were born before 9/11 are graduating this year. Do you support the governor's efforts at making 9/11 mandatory curriculum in schools?
Well, you know, we saw for the first time the governor sign legislation requiring a moment of silence and remembrance every 9/11 in our schools. And I appreciate that effort. I'm always a little leery of when the government wants to mandate a curriculum outside its main core, though, as I'm not sure who'll be teaching it, what will it encompass, what's age appropriate, perhaps. So we have some concerns. From a historical perspective, we appreciate the moment of silence and that the government is doing something here to make sure that we will never forget 9/11.
Mm. And Michael, the big controversy over quarterback Drew Brees. There's a video even on your website promoting Take Your Bible to School Day, but he's taken it on the chin from some gay and lesbian activists over this video. How come?
Well, the Take Your Bible to School Day is sponsored by Focus on the Family, and quarterback Drew Brees of the New Orleans Saints did a video encouraging young people, students, to take their Bibles to school, to be bold about their faith. We encourage that as well. The schools are not religion-free zones or Christianity-free zones, and students are free to express their faith there. This one publication down in Louisiana, kind of an obscene sort of a pro-gay newsletter, put out a criticism of Drew Brees, saying the Focus on the Family was some sort of hate group, which people who know Focus on the Family know that is not true. And then mainstream media kind of picked it up and said, has Drew Brees kind of stepped in it? Jim Daly has gone on the air. He was on Fox News recently talking about what was behind what Drew Brees did
And I think the New Orleans Saints fans see it for what it is and truly support their quarterback, who is not only destined for the Hall of Fame, but I think destined for heaven as well as a born-again Christian.
Yeah, he's one of the good guys. You can't help but cheer for Drew Brees. And, Jason, a lot of DMV workers, I know Mickey Kearns from Erie County has been on national media talking about this green light law, which will take effect in mid-December. So it's coming, folks. He's concerned that county workers could be jailed if they do not comply with this law. Is he exaggerating that?
Well, I don't think he's exaggerating. I think it's not going to come to that, but there's a potential reality. You know, essentially, again, Andrew Cuomo, our governor, and the state government here, led under the Democratic majorities, are really putting an emphasis on this green light law that is giving these driver's licenses to people that are undocumented, to illegal aliens. And that's a political football right now. And so there are a lot of clerks that are saying, we don't agree with this, we're not going to do it. But the pressure of government will come down on them heavy, and that's their concern, is what will happen. Now, I'll just contrast that and say that, you know, when the clerks were looking at whether or not they had the right to view to sign a same-sex marriage license, there was not as much concern as there is over this issue. So you can view it through the lens of politics, and you'll see things a little differently.
All right, we'll see how that pans out. Michael, the governor, Wolf, who is overseas right now, he did make it an emergency declaration, his seventh, on this opioid epidemic, which continues to be a major issue. What are your thoughts on these disaster declarations? Are they making any dent in the war on drugs in Pennsylvania?
Well, it is such a serious problem, not only in Pennsylvania, but around the country with, fentanyl, the synthetic opioid flooding our country from China and across the Mexican border. I think it is making a dent. I think it's kind of interesting that it's being done in this way to string these 90-day disaster declarations one after another. But something needs to be done, and I think if there's better coordination with the state agencies to attack the problem directly, that is a positive thing. You know, one of my children's friends growing up just 2 weeks ago, lost his life because of an opioid overdose. And so it hits home to so many Pennsylvania families, and we're hopeful that these efforts and others can really make a dent in this severe problem.
Indeed. Jason, this is a kind of a mouthful here, substantial equivalency rule. It has to do with the public school oversight of private schools. Explain what that is and why you're so concerned.
Well, in a nutshell, private schools in New York, including the Christian schools we represent, are supposed to be offering what's called substantially equivalent education. But the concern is that the state ed department is instituting a new regulation that will allow the local public school to have jurisdiction and authority over the private schools. And we have concerns there, as oftentimes the public school is really in competition with the private school, not only in athletics and academics, but even sometimes in ideological views. So we're really concerned about, again, the weight of government putting its thumb on the scale against private schools is a potential concern. So, we're fighting back against that.
So where are we in that whole process? Is this mandatory yet? Are the districts mandated to do this, or is it still a work in progress here?
Now, it's still a work in progress. The initial rule was put out wrongfully, and through court action, it was taken back. It was resubmitted, and 140,000 comments have come into the state opposing this new rule.
Wow.
And so I hope it's gotten the attention of Albany to say, do not go down this path.
And then finally, Michael, I know you're a busy man this time of year getting ready for your big fundraiser coming up at the Hershey Lodge Friday, September 27th. I know a lot of folks here, Family Life, can't wait to attend that event. Friends of the Family Banquet, explain what it is and who you've got speaking this year.
It's our 30th anniversary of the Pennsylvania Family Institute celebrating at this banquet, and our keynote speaker is Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And what's notable about what she's planning to do, in addition to giving a presentation, a speech that she will give, she's also going to be taking questions for about 25 minutes from the audience. So if there are any Jim Acostas out there looking for it, well, maybe not. But folks who would like to pose a question to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, we're not concerned that she would have any trouble handling whatever audience has their way. So people can find out more about the banquet at our website, which I'll be giving later. But we're excited. We have over close to 1,200 folks that have registered already, and there's still time to sign up.
And if Jim Acosta wants to come, he's more than welcome to as well.
If he buys a ticket.
Buy the ticket, yeah. And where is that website, Michael, where folks can get registered?
It's pafamily.org.
Stay informed on all the issues in New York. There are plenty to talk about. Jason, what's your site, sir?
albanyupdate.com.
All right, guys, excellent show today. Thank you. Capital Connection airs Fridays during the Noon Report online anytime, fln.org/news. You can download all our feature reports at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. A variety of conditions so far today across the region, with central New York seeing a good deal of sunshine so far, but quite a bit of cloudiness over much of Pennsylvania and much of the southern tier of New York. Some sun at times over portions of the Finger Lakes and the Buffalo Niagara Falls area as well. In all areas, more clouds likely through the afternoon and for tonight. Not much precipitation, though. A weak warm front may produce a few showers late tonight and tomorrow morning, followed by a cold front, which may lead to a couple more showers during the day tomorrow, but none of the rain will be very heavy. We should see some clearing tomorrow night and a fair amount of sunshine as we finish the weekend on Sunday, although more clouds will begin to show up during the afternoon.
Okay, Ken, thank you very much at the Weather Center filling in for Kevin today. And finally at noon, a Memphis baby born at 9/11 on 9/11. And that's not all. This baby weighed 9 pounds, 11 ounces.
All of a sudden, we heard the whang, and next thing you know, they called it 9/11. And then they got on the table, and all of a sudden, oh, my God, she weighs 9/11. The doctor is still excited. She's like, this is a 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, baby.
How about that? Justin Brown, the proud papa of little baby Christina. Her mom says, to bring new life into this world on a day so symbolic of death and tragedy, well, that is bittersweet.
On that day, 9/11, you know, you find triumph. You find a piece of joy from a day that's so drastic and still hurts.
Assisting in that 9/11 special delivery was their nurse, Rachel Laughlin.
I've never seen it in 38 years. It's very rare, but very special. It just makes her a special, even more special little girl than she is.
Christina's parents were in middle school when 9/11 happened, and the Browns hope to bring home their special delivery from the hospital soon. What a story. That's the world we live in, Friday, September 13th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.